Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, who's Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. He has written extensively about voters and voting behavior and founded the Keystone Poll in 1992, the oldest survey produced exclusively in Pennsylvania, which has been renamed the Franklin and Marshall College Poll. He is also the pollster for the Philadelphia Daily News and many other newspapers and television stations in Pennsylvania. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Terry Madonna.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And clearly the state of Pennsylvania is poised to make a fairly radical change, is it not, in the electoral college rules. Instead of a winner-take-all, it would essentially reapportion the votes according to congressional districts. And the congressional districts are such that instead of, in the last election, President Obama got 21 electoral votes in the winner-take-all situation in Pennsylvania. In 2012, the district redistricting has taken the votes, the total down to 20. But even if Obama were to win the popular vote, and he would normally get the 20 votes. Under the new rules, the Republicans are likely to get 12 of those votes and Obama only 8. And in a close election, that could be the deciding factor.
Yeah, that's certainly accurate. And, you know, I went back and looked the change of the electoral vote on the Republican side in favor of giving the Republicans, as you point out, 12, maybe 11 or 10, whatever the number might be, would not have changed any presidential election, you know, since before the Civil War. And I didn't go back and look earlier than that. But in my judgment, most of us in the state are having trouble understanding the motivation behind this. Even Republicans have come out strongly against this plan, which is being put forward by a suburban Philadelphia Republican who is the majority leader in a Senate that's controlled by Republicans, as is the House in our state, as is the governorship, but the governor is for it, and some Republican leaders in the House. So you're accurate in the sense that if they push hard with this change, Ian, they have the votes to bring it about. But there is all sorts of pushback now coming from national and state Republican Party leaders, as well as Republican members of Congress in the swing districts, which right now are in Republican hands in Pennsylvania, which could be severely affected by this change.
And why would that be affected by the change?
Well, no any longer, if you go to a congressional district system, you know, in which one elector for each election district, in Pennsylvania about two-thirds of them are already decided because, you know, they're strongly Republican or strongly Democrat. The marginal congressional districts, the competitive ones, every single one is in Republican hands. Translation, now instead of putting the money in the big cities to increase Democratic turnout, President Obama, for example, and this is what Republicans fear, would dump all sorts of money and his political allies in these competitive congressional districts, of which there are, as I point out, five or six, and they now, the Republican members of Congress who are the incumbents, would face all of these new challenges within their districts. You know, all this money coming in from presidential campaigns, from third parties, from, by that I mean the interest groups, the 501Cs, you know, you name it. And the Republican members of Congress are very concerned that that could change the political calculation in those districts, which right now is competitive, but it could help the Democrats, and that's why they're deeply concerned about it.
But, you know, if you're a partisan Republican and somebody working at the national level, either for candidate Perry or for, for candidate whoever, you know, Romney, whoever is the nominee, the idea that instead of Obama winning 20 in a winner-take-all in Pennsylvania, if he only ends up with 8,
that's
money in the bank.
I don't disagree with that. With you on that, if you're the candidate's campaign manager, for example, you'd say that's not a bad idea. However, the Republican national chairman has originally came out against it. He then gave a speech, by the way, at a meeting in Pennsylvania before the Republican State Committee over the weekend, and he urged to go slow. I think it depends where you fall in terms of how it might affect you. You know, if you're a candidate, you know, as you point out, if you're Rick Perry or you're Mitt Romney, whoever the nominee might be, you might think this is a good idea. If you're a member of Congress or if you're a party leader and you're looking at the broader picture, you might have second thoughts about it. I was actually surprised. I wrote a piece about this, a colleague and I, that as soon as it came out, and I was actually stunned because I'm not convinced that they thought this all the way through, and it came out of the blue. I mean, there was no build-up. Normally you get a build-up, you have press conferences, you have people going around and talking about it, but this literally came out of the night, not like what you had in your state where you had this big debate on the National Popular Vote compact, which you all have approved out in California. You know, they had a lot of build up, a lot of debate over it. There's been no debate on this in my state. Now, the governor and the Senate Majority Leader have said there'll be hearings, and now there'll be debate, I think, in large part because of the pushback by not just Democrats who are apoplectic over it, as you might expect, but by the some Republicans as well.
Well, the governor, though, Tom Corbett, has said he will support this bill.
Yes, he will support it, but he wants hearings, and he has urged Republicans, and he gave a talk at this big Republican powwow that I referenced a moment ago, and he said, I don't want this to get in the way of the fall elections in our state. Like, you know, California, we have municipal elections and court elections in these odd-numbered years, but he cautioned people not to let the debate over this, you know, divide Republicans and to keep focused on the off-year election. My comment was, well, then why did you bring it up on the eve of these elections and start this big debate if you don't want people, you know, to be engaged in it, which they, in my state, they, and this, as you point out, has become a national story as well.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. G. Terry Madonna, who's professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College, leading pollster in the state of Pennsylvania, and we're talking about plans on the part of the Republican legislature to change the Electoral College rules to be in line with only two other states in the union, which are Nebraska and Maine, that award their Electoral College votes to by congressional district. And this is a change from a winner-take-all system, which would disadvantage a Democratic president who would normally has normally, at least since, 1988?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean,
Democrats have won, and that means that they've won all of the electoral votes. Now they would win less than half under the new system. And meanwhile, the former Democratic governor, Governor Ed Rendell, has referred to this proposal. The motivation for this is somewhere between despicable and reprehensible.
Well, no one ever said that former Governor Rendell wouldn't lay it on the line. He's pretty blunt. You know, the other thing about the CN that sort of surprises me, as you pointed out, we've got two states that have done this in the, you know, since the 20th century. Michigan did it in the late 19th century, and earlier in the Republic, you know, after the Constitution was adopted, a number of states did pick electors on at the congressional district level in the method that you've been describing. I went back and looked at the turnout. You know, I thought, well, maybe this will, the Republicans think they'll increase their turnout and somehow this will help them. I went and looked at Maine, one of the two other states, and historically, over the last couple of decades, regardless of whether it's a presidential election or a midterm election, Maine has had among the highest turnout rates in the country. Then I looked at Nebraska. In 2008, Nebraska was 30th in overall turnout. And Nebraska, as many, perhaps all of your listeners do not know, has three congressional districts. They, you know, selected their electors out of those districts, three of them. Their turnout was 30%. Pennsylvania's was 26%. So another thing that the argument for it was, well, this will increase interest in, you know, represent the diversity of the state, you know, like California's. Pennsylvania is a very big and diverse state, not as big as your state. And I'm thinking, well, okay, then let me go look and see what states have done you know, the two states that have done it in recent history, and there's no evidence that it increases turnout. So this is all, I think you're right. I mean, I think this is basically for Republicans to pick up a few electoral votes, but what they didn't think about was it may put their competitive congressional districts on the line, you know what I mean, meaning that it could cause them to be more competitive and maybe help the Democrats. The members of the congressional delegation in my state from those competitive CDs are apoplectic over it. I mean, they're trying not to express that as openly as I am, but they are deeply concerned about this plan for what it might do in those congressional races coming up next year.
Yeah, but of course, at the end of the day, the Republicans would much prefer to pick up the White House and they could afford to lose one or two seats.
You're absolutely right about that, but if you're a member of Congress, it doesn't make you very happy.
No, you're not a happy camper. I thank you for joining us here, Dr. Terry Madonna. Again, Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at the Franklin Marshall College. So what did we learn today on Background Briefing? Well, we began with the country's leading expert on tax and tax policy, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston. We were analyzing, of course, the president's announcement, plans to tax millionaires and his threat to veto any Republican deficit reduction plan that doesn't include raising revenues. It does certainly feel like the president is laying down some markers, acting like a president, and a little too late in the game for a lot of people, obviously. But, David K. Johnston welcomed it and thought it really was, it could be a game changer. He felt that the president really was going to box them in, to a pretty difficult choice, to reject stuff that, their base, the business community, would really like, deferring taxes and getting reward tax benefits for hiring people. The Republicans have laid down this marker that, we've got to protect millionaires and billionaires, and there's not going to be any revenue increases. So the battle is on. He also said that the billionaires, the Koch brothers and company, clearly, no surprise that they're enormously benefit from the Supreme Court ruling. They can spend unlimited money. But he doesn't believe they're cynical. He believes they actually believe that if the oligarchs run this country, somehow it will be better for all of us when the evidence is so manifest that as you concentrate more and more wealth in the hands of the fewer and fewer people, there's less and less to go around for the rest of us. I mean, the president himself talked about this is not about class warfare. This is about math. But class warfare, of course, comes up all the time. It is the refrain. David K. Johnston did mention that the president, the person who the bill's named after, the billionaire Warren Buffett, said, yeah, sure, there's class warfare, and the rich won. But it still seems to be an argument that that seems to have some traction. At least they presumably that's why they use it all the time. But I guess the takeaway from that was that maybe this is a turning point, and that the president may well be able to shame the Republicans into cooperating. I would certainly hold my breath on that prediction. Then we talked about the election rules that have been changed in various of these important states that have been taken over in 2010 by Republicans, where they control the legislatures and the governorships. Key states like Ohio, Wisconsin, Florida, state of Ohio played a huge role in 2004. And we talked with Daniel Takagi, who's a professor of law at Ohio State University, where he's a specialist in election law. He walked us through all of the restrictions that have been passed very quickly without any debate in the sort of dead of night by these Republican legislatures. They're also doing an enormous amount of redistricting in Ohio. They've combining Marcy Kaptur's seat with Dennis Kucinich's seat in this gerrymandering that'll put Kucinich out of business. Just to give you an idea of the math of gerrymandering, the state's always been evenly votes 50% Democrat, 50% Republican. That's why it's a swing state. But under the new gerrymandering, the Republicans will control 12 out of the 16 districts. So they go from, even though you have a 50-50 Republican-Democrat vote, you've got a 75-25 split in favor of the Republicans in terms of representation. So there is the, in stark detail, stark relief, if you will, the mathematics of gerrymandering. But this is happening in many other states, as he pointed out. And to some extent, it's because the American people have no idea how voting, you know, we learned in 2000 that it was kind of third world and a banana republic down in there in Florida. But, you know, the irony is that in many third world countries right next door in Mexico, voting is incredibly easy and secure and efficient. And it's right next door in Canada, tremendous turnout because registration is not an issue in any other country. So it goes back to the founding fathers who are all about restricting the vote. I guess that's the sort of political DNA that we're talking about here. And then we continued the discussion further on voting restrictions by Republican legislatures elected in 2010, planning, seeing what they could do to rig the votes in 2012. We spoke with Dr. Terry Madonna in Pennsylvania. He's a leading pollster in Pennsylvania who directs the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. The Republican legislature are planning on changing the Electoral College rules there to permanently favor the Republicans, at least in the short term, at least, in the 2012 presidential election. Previously, in 2008, Obama took the whole state. It's a winner-take-all system. He took all 21 seats. Now the Republicans have gerrymandered it down to 20 seats. But under these new rules, they would, instead of the Democrat winning all, the Republicans are likely to pick up 12 out of 20, which would leave the Democrats with 8. So Obama's total in the Electoral College is minus 12, just by changing the rules. So you can see why they're doing it. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.